It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, in today for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk to a WPR News reporter who's covering a forum tonight for Democratic candidates for Wisconsin's Attorney General.
First, we're starting our three-day series on heroin use in Wisconsin. Heroin is a highly addictive, illegal substance that can be snorted, smoked, or injected. And many people think heroin addiction is only a problem in big cities or in desperate dark alleys.
But the drug has found a new home in Wisconsin's small towns and suburban communities. Users aren't the hardened addicts of popular imagination. According to State Department of Justice statistics, there are often teens and young adults in Wisconsin who may turn to heroin after forming an addiction to painkillers. Prescription drugs like oxycodone and hydrocodone are getting harder to find and are expensive. Heroin is relatively cheaper and easier to come by.
And the problem in Wisconsin is getting worse. The number of heroin cases processed by state crime labs has steadily increased in almost every Wisconsin county over the last 3 years. The number of heroin-related deaths is on the rise, too, going up 50% in the last year and quadrupling since 2007.
We have two guests with us today to put a face on the heroin problem in Wisconsin. One is Nathan Komp, a journalist and recovering heroin addict himself. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Karen Hale is with us, the mother of a woman who died from an opiate overdose. Karen, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Nathan, let's start with you. You've written about your experience with heroin for the Wisconsin State Journal. We've got that piece linked on our Facebook page. You're a writer. You've got a career going, a college-educated person. How did you find yourself using heroin?
I first used it back in 1999. Same story you've probably heard a million times. Got started on the painkillers. I was dating a girl who was having some medical issues, and the doctors were prescribing her lots and lots of pain meds, and we started hitting those, and then her issues cleared up, and by that time, we heard for the pills quite a bit, and they were really hard to come by back in like the late 90s. Like, they weren't real popular like they are now, and so we made the transition to heroin, and last year was sort of the same story. Kind of started hanging out with, met people who were into the pills, and kind of started dabbling with them for old time's sake, and just snowballed real fast.
And in both cases, the original and the relapse, it was that easy to go out and find heroin when the prescription drugs were too expensive or too hard to find?
Yeah, I mean, it takes a little work, but, drugs, if you're looking for them, you'll find them. They're not that hard to find.
And then, Karen, let's bring you in on this. Your daughter, Alyssa, died from a drug overdose. What was the story? How did she first start using heroin?
Just like Nathan, on prescription drugs, and then it escalated to the heroin. When the pills became hard to come by or expensive, the easiest and the cheapest thing is heroin.
And she was actually prescribed the pain medications originally, right?
That's correct. When she had her wisdom teeth taken out, they gave her a 30-day prescription of oxycodone.
Looking back now, Karen, when did you start seeing red flags that your daughter was using heroin?
Almost like immediately after she had the wisdom teeth out, I saw a change in her behavior. I mean, as a parent, it is the most horrific and gut-wrenching experience that you'll ever go through. The behavior was so volatile. Her behavior, it changed like overnight. Everything was blaming me. She, stole from me. She lied. And because her job became finding the drug. And unfortunately, when the pills became very expensive, then, like I said earlier, the next best thing is heroin. It's cheaper. With us being a border town, it was readily available and easily attainable from Minnesota.
Nathan, when did it first hit you that you weren't just trying heroin, you were addicted to it?
It came when, my girlfriend and I, we kind of knew, I don't know when that exact moment hit. It's real insidious, and it just kind of, hits you one day that, I can't get through my day without this. And we were living in New Mexico at the time, and you know, we left New Mexico because the heroin problem out there is just really incredible, and went up to North Dakota thinking that would be a better spot for us. We got jobs up there, and that turned into an even worse situation because of the oil boom. And then, you know, we just kept finding, trying to find anything, pills, heroin, whatever, up until, you know, when I found Sarah that night. And
as I've
just kind of always knew.
Yeah, as I've heard from other people, Nathan, at some point you're not taking heroin or the other drugs because they're enjoyable. You're taking them to stop the pain of the withdrawal. What happens if you don't take them? Am I right about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's always that level of enjoyment. I mean, that's kind of, you know, what lures you in the first place. Is like you feel good, you know, and you know, like the pills get really expensive. I mean, you know. 30 milligram oxycodone is $30, you know, it's like $1 a milligram. And, you know, before you know it, you need 100 milligrams to just kind of, you know, normalize. And you know, the heroin's a lot cheaper.
And as
what was
you,
the question again? I'm sorry.
That's okay. As you write, Nathan, you and your girlfriend had rules that you try to follow along the way. Only take it when the other one was there or different things like that. Did it make it feel safer?
It did. I mean, we really managed to trick ourselves real well into thinking that, you know, like, you know, we'll be clean about it. You know, we'll always use clean needles. We'll always, you know, use alcohol swabs. We'll, you know, use saline instead of tap water. And, you know, we'll, you know, pay attention to the potency when we pick up, you know, new stuff. And, yeah, and the big thing was to not use alone because, you know, if you turn blue, you know, you want there to be able to give you Narcan to bring you back. And so, you know, slowly, you know, it just became... You know, our work schedules would overlap and, you know, we would, you know, be hurting. So we would, you know, fix up and get well and go about our day.
And Karen, going back to you, your daughter, as you mentioned, her behavior changed, her attitude changed. But at one point she approached you and asked for help with quitting. What was it like? How did that process go trying to help her quit?
Well, unfortunately, at that time, I found out we didn't have health insurance. And so... You know, it's a hidden disease, right? Who do you call as a parent? You know, I didn't want to go out on websites, or I tried to go out on some, you know, there's Facebook sites, but I didn't know if my privacy would be, you know, exposed. So I called into the county, and basically it was like, come in for assessment. Alyssa didn't want to go. So I tried to detox her out of the house, which was probably the worst decision looking back now. But at that time, I didn't know what other resources was out there. So I tried to detox her from the house, and it was like a true exorcism. I mean, she was vomiting. She was screaming that it felt like someone was pulling her hair right out of her scalp. It felt like someone was ripping her skin off of her arms, her legs, you know, trying to keep her legs from being set because they were so unsettled. And that's part of that dope sickness or the withdrawal piece off of it. You know, I was so ignorant. Sitting back and looking at what I know today compared to what I know then, when you're in the tornado of addiction, I think you're so isolated and you don't know who to contact and where to go for help. And unfortunately, any type of treatment center for Alyssa was $38,000 or X amount. And unfortunately, they don't do a payment plan. You know, it was cash money right then. Well, I just didn't have that readily available cash to try and get her in some form of treatment. She did get some detox. She went into January or December of a year ago, went in for 5 days. And when she walked out, I thought, okay, she's fixed. We can move on with life. But that wasn't the case. And that's not how this drug just takes and holds so much onto the individual, on the addict.
Nathan, were there points where you tried to quit, and what kind of help did you find out there when you were looking to quit?
You know, we tried to quit all the time. I mean, anytime we saw somebody overdose, we were like, this is it, this is, we're done, you know, and you know, we might go a couple of days, you know, especially if it was like a weekend and we didn't have to work and we could just kind of, you know, suffer it out. But, you know, we would end up buying Suboxone, which is kind of like an alternative to methadone. It's a doctor can prescribe it to you, so you don't have to go to a clinic every day. And so on you know, the times we didn't have money or, you know, we couldn't find anything, you know, odds were we'd be able to find at least Suboxone. So, you know, we would, you know, at least not have to go through the withdrawal. So, you know, whenever we traveled, we'd always travel with Suboxone or whatnot. In terms of getting into a doctor, it was really difficult because there's such a demand out there for Suboxone right now in the federal government. Previously limited doctors to 30 patients. So I think they've increased that now to up to 100. But it was, in New Mexico, we called every Suboxone doctor in the northern part of the state, and every one of them had at least a 6 to 9 month waiting list. So help was incredibly hard to come by, and we both had health insurance.
We're talking to two Wisconsinites whose lives have been touched by heroin addiction and who've both lost people they loved to heroin. Nathan Komp, a journalist, he wrote about his experience with heroin for the Wisconsin State Journal. And we have Karen Hale, the mother of a young woman who died from an opiate overdose.
And so we're asking you, has your life been affected by heroin addiction? Have you struggled with heroin use, or has someone close to you been in that situation? How does it affect your relationships? How does it affect your life? Call in and share your story at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email. That address is talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation now with Nathan Komp, a journalist and recovering heroin addict, and Karen Hale, the mother of a woman who died from an opiate overdose.
And you can join in. Has your life been affected by heroin addiction? Or someone in your family, maybe. Call in at 800-642-1234. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. But I want to talk to Nathan and Karen about why you are telling the stories of yourself, Nathan, and your daughter, Karen, and what we can get out of that. Karen, first, you have, since your daughter passed away, been active, and you've actually been working with other people who are addicts now, right?
Right, that's correct. It's, you know, today is sitting 10 months today. I lost my daughter. And, you know, the pain doesn't get any better and it doesn't get any easier. You know, I think my advocacy started with just trying to educate myself about this deep, dark, secret world that my daughter was in. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I didn't know. So, you know, my quest is if I can help one parent, one other person that is going through this, not to experience this most excruciating pain of losing a child, and to help educate, you know, along the way, I'm educating myself too, but I'm also learning about that private world of my daughters. And that's really what this started. You know, living in Hudson, we had a Hudson Forum to educate the public because, you know, everyone didn't realize what was going on. I mean, we lost 7 young people, one right after the other. And it was time for people to stand up, to open their eyes, to break the stigma associated with this disease of addiction to opiates and heroin.
And Nathan, you shared a very personal story, lost people, including your girlfriend in North Dakota. Why did you write this piece for the State Journal? What are you hoping the rest of us get out of that?
You know, I actually wrote it for my website initially. I broke my ankle in January, and I was just kind of sitting around, and then Phil Seymour Hoffman died, and it just kind of brought a lot of things back. And, you know, I just kind of rattled it off. It was the two-month anniversary of her passing, and, you know, her and I were really isolated for the last year of her life, being in New Mexico and in North Dakota. Like, none of her family or friends really knew what was going on. They suspected, but they didn't really know. Didn't ask a lot of questions, even after I came back to Madison after she passed away. You know, it was just kind of to get off my chest, and then, you know, just kind of grew wings and resonated with people, I guess.
Well, we've got other people with stories on the line now. Sue is with us in Brookfield. Sue, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. And hi, Nathan and Karen. And Karen, I'm so sorry for your loss. It's been a great fear of mine as well. My son has been addicted for many years, and heroin is his choice. Even though he will use anything that's available, he started at 14, you know, smoking pot, and from there it just escalated. He's now 29 and has been on and off What I'm wondering is, as a parent, to actually just save myself, I had to step out. There was just nothing left that I could do to help him. And Nathan, as someone who's been through it, and Karen, as a parent, do you, either of you, have thoughts of anything that we as parents can do to reach that child? I can't reach him anymore.
Sue, I'm sorry for that story. And Karen, do you have, first of all, do you have advice or at least thoughts for Sue?
You know, I walked through that helpless and hopeless, you know, because, you know, you want to give them that cure or that help on a silver platter. And it just, you know, until the person wants to help, you know, that was like with Alyssa. I tried everything. So I wish I could give you a magic wand and say, here, you know, this will help the problem. You know, I don't have the answer. And unfortunately, I know a lot of moms out there that aren't like you and like myself for so many months and years that I went through that. You know, and I apologize that I can't give you that silver lining. All I can say is just hope and pray that your son, you know, knows that he's loved. Just continually say, you know, what can I do to help you? Not financially, not, but what can I do? Or just, are you ready for treatment? Are you ready to get clean? You know, I used to tell my daughter, you've been so good at this addiction. Why don't you try being sober? And, you know, that's all I could do.
And Nathan, is there something that someone, a parent, a loved one could have done to help reach you, to help you out of addiction?
I struggle with that. You know, Sarah and I went back and forth so many times, you know, we both knew we needed to quit. We knew things weren't headed in a good direction. But it's scary when you reach that point where, you know, you can't do it by yourself or even together. You know, the prospect of getting clean for some reason, it's really scary. The depression that follows, the pains, the humiliation, you know, everything that goes along with it, it's just hard, you know. And then you got the people, you know, you're using friends who, you know, continue to call, and, you know, it's hard. It's really, really hard. I've got about going on 3 months now, and it's really not that much easier than that first day. It really isn't.
Thank you so much for the call, and good luck. We'll go to Chris in Oshkosh now. Chris, hi.
Hi. There is a certain amount of help available for people, particularly if they have family members that are supportive and can help them with transportation and stuff. Milwaukee has 100, Salvation Army in Milwaukee has 100-bed facility, and that's free, 6-month to 1-year program. Usually takes about that long to transform the psyche, for lack of a better word. Every major city has these centers, Salvation Army centers, but the best thing is, of course, get a person into detox and get them detoxified and get them into some sort of a treatment while they're somewhat sober, and sometimes that'll take. It's a vicious thing. I'm alcoholic, I understand it, and other substance abuse, but I've been free now for about 35 years, and I worked down there as a volunteer. And you do see results, and you do see people restored to wholeness, and it's independent of any funding whatsoever on the person's part.
Chris, thanks a lot for sharing those tips. In major cities, not necessarily where we need them in Wisconsin now, though. In rural areas and suburban areas, we're seeing more heroin use. Just a little bit of time left. Briefly, Karen, anything that you want people to know that they might not know about heroin use?
Well, you know, it doesn't necessarily start with a needle. You know, like you mentioned earlier in the program, snorting, smoking, you know, Alyssa started that way. She started snorting it. She started smoking it. And then when the needle came into place, that's when, you know, the whole thing exploded. You know, I've talked to a lot of the kids out here, and, you know, they are racked with guilt. It's not, you know, I tried to understand, you know, my daughter's behavior because of, you know, the theft and different things. And I think Nathan also, you know, tackled on it. After a while, your friends that you used to have that you don't use with, they turn their backs on them. And I would say to anyone listening, if you have a loved one or a friend that is using, reach out to them. Because you know what? They want to know that there's people out here supporting them. Just reach out and say, what can I do to help you? Because I know Alyssa, when she became sober for the 64 days, that was her biggest heartbreak, is all the people that turned their backs on her. And she so desperately wanted true friends that could support her in her sobriety. I think that would be the message.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to Karen Hale and Nathan Comp for coming on the air with us and sharing their stories as part of our series on heroin in Wisconsin.
Tomorrow on our series, we talk to Wisconsin State Representative John Nygren, who has sponsored several bills on heroin in Wisconsin and whose daughter has struggled with heroin addiction.